Hello, I'm Megan Morris-Carter, Director of The Hill. Welcome to Series 3 of our Digital Innovation podcast. The Hill supports an ecosystem of startups, scale-ups, partners, and clinical staff interested in digital innovation, as well as managing a pipeline of innovation into Oxford University hospitals and the wider NHS. Our work supports better patient care through technology and innovation. This series explores some of the technologies that are at the cutting edge of healthcare delivery through the medium of the entrepreneurial journeys of some of the founders in our community, as well as the clinicians they have worked with to pilot their technologies. Henry, fantastic to have you join us on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming in today.
It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Can we start with a brief introduction? Could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you ended up becoming an entrepreneur?
Sure. So I'm the co-founder and CEO of MyMind and a visiting fellow at the Said Business School at Oxford University. But that's not where it began. I did my PhD in Cambridge in neurology and neuroscience about 20 plus years ago, and felt at the time I wanted to make a bigger impact than I could. Working in that space, working within those settings, and moved into some big organizations. And so I used to run strategy at companies like Mars and 20th Century Fox, Johnson & Johnson. And I moved into sustainability because I felt that I wanted to help people avoid becoming unwell in the first place by getting access to sanitation, nutrition, education, all of these things. So I moved into sustainability and worked in that space for about 10 years to try to support people. And then it was around 2020 that I saw that the people were struggling, really finding it hard to deal with all of the challenges, the uncertainty, things that were happening around us. And that's what meant that I begrudgingly and unwittingly moved into well-being. I had no intention really to move into digital mental health, but it's something that drew me in.
And what is it that drew you in? Why is it so important?
Sure. So I'm actually doing it for very personal reasons as well. So I lost someone very close to me around 25 years ago who took their own life. And I said at that time, okay, we need to do something about this, and spent the time in the intervening period trying to understand what's really happening behind the scenes, what's driving this, and trying to equip myself with the skills and experience to be able to support that. And around 2020, when everyone was out there creating these mental health apps and creating tools, I wanted to try and understand what's the real challenge there, what's really happening. And so I took myself inside some of these organizations like the NHS, like some big retailers, big universities, to understand where are the challenges, what's really happening there. And I could see that, you know, the challenge wasn't a shortage of apps or tools. It was that it's really hard to identify those people who are struggling. It's really hard to provide targeted support where it's needed. It's really hard to provide intervention early enough and access support at a real system level. And so I recognized that challenge and felt, okay, rather than trying to invent something new, let's try and respond in a more meaningful way, bringing together all of the different elements that can work and try to, you know, drive impact at scale.
So what is it that's not provided in current workplace wellbeing? There's obviously a lot of stuff out there, a lot of apps, a lot of different things that you can do to support wellbeing. But where did you feel there was a gap?
So there are lots of tools that are out there and exist, but what I found that many of them were reactive, too little, too late. They had poor engagement. Only 1-2% of people were actually using them. They weren't personalized, and so people didn't necessarily identify with those challenges. They would feel like, actually, I'm fine. I don't need to use this, or this isn't for me. Or, you know, sometimes they would feel judged or stigmatized, and so they wouldn't necessarily engage. And there hasn't necessarily been a clear pathway for support. So you wouldn't necessarily know where to go or what to do. And so people are more likely to suffer in silence rather than access this kind of support. And I tried to thread each of those things together to find a more accessible, relatable, workable, personalized response that people can access that doesn't just support the individuals, but also supports the whole organization.
Can you tell us a bit about the components of MyMind that help to do that?
Sure. So MyMind proactively identifies issues for early intervention by offering an assessment that perhaps 50 to 60% of a workforce will complete, rather than that 1-2% that often complete for other services or tools which are reactive. Then once the assessment is completed, an individual gets a really detailed understanding of their own mental health risks, but also their protective factors or resilience. So it's not just about, you know, saying, how do you go from minus one back to zero or zero to plus one? It's as much about how do we help you to stay at plus one or get to plus five or plus 20. If there are any concerns, then you're connected to our team of responders who are able to follow up immediately to help you understand your situation, what that means, why it's important, and crucially, what you can do about it. And so they'll guide you through resources within My Mind, within your organisation, or wider services that you might not be aware of. And all of that is completely confidential, of course. But what we're also able to do is take all of the aggregated data and insights to understand what are the emerging trends and themes within the organisation. And then we're able to provide a curriculum or programme with the organisation to support not just the individuals, but also the wider organisation to respond to those emerging trends, what's happening. Some of the things that wouldn't necessarily surface from individuals, or they wouldn't necessarily be as comfortable sharing within their organisation. So that we're able to elevate the capability across the whole organisation and create an environment where everyone can really flourish and thrive.
You've obviously done this with a number of different organisations. What are the sort of themes that are emerging in terms of the challenges of workplace wellbeing, and what's the scale of the problem here?
I think we've all experienced challenges. There's been a great deal of uncertainty and conflicting demands. We're all feeling very overwhelmed and overloaded. We find it really hard to keep up with all of those demands, you know, not just inside of work, but outside of work as well. And it means that it's interesting that we're seeing very common challenges and themes across different organizations. And so the sectors, you know, there are small variations, but the differences are as much about the nature of the work. So we're seeing that some of the challenges for managers, for example, it's really hard to feel like you're able to support the needs of all of those people who are working for you. It's very hard to meet those demands, the expectations. So the expectations of the organisation are up here, kind of around your eyes. The expectations from yourself are up here over your head. The resources you're given are somewhere here, and the control you have is somewhere downstairs. And the way you try and bridge that gap is by stretching and pulling yourself apart. And you know, it's very hard to feel like you're able to do all of the things that you need to. We're seeing that there's reduced connection and trust. It means there's less goodwill. We're not as willing to see the good. We're seeing reduced hope. We're all, you know, things have changed. They haven't always gone back to the way that we want them. We don't feel as much control over the outcomes and over the future that we used to. We're seeing external factors, things like cost of living has been impacting people. Some of the recent tensions we've seen around the UK have been impacting people. And it's been really hard to identify where those concerns have been. It's really hard to identify those people who are struggling and get access to that support. And what's also interesting that we've noticed is that people, because we don't necessarily feel like we can contribute, we don't necessarily feel we have the agency, it means people don't necessarily feel they can belong, they don't have the ability to contribute, be a part of that conversation. And it means it's harder to be able to innovate, to be able to collaborate, to be able to draw in those different voices that we need to address the kinds of challenges that we're facing right now as a society and as a system.
So are you seeing that there's different challenges across different industries, or are there some common threads?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we obviously work with a number of different sectors, particularly across healthcare, with NHS trusts, with higher education, universities. But we've also been working with law firms and retailers and professional services, engineers, builders, construction, etc. And we've seen some differences across those different sectors, but also differences within the organisations. So if we take healthcare, for example, and the NHS, one of the things that we've observed that's really interesting is that there's, of course, you know, very high conscientiousness. People really care. They really want to do their best. There's this perceived responsibility towards your colleagues, towards your patients, towards other people, which is what's making what were already really intense roles even more stressful. We're finding that people find it really hard to be able to take time off or be able to deal with those challenges. And sometimes actually they're just becoming really exhausted and burnt out. And so the first time you hear about it is that they're suffering in silence and eventually simply quit because they find it hard to keep up. But there's also, interestingly, this fear of judgment and stigma. You don't necessarily want to talk to colleagues or use services within your own organization, particularly because some of the challenges are from outside of work. So things like relationship challenges, cost of living, they're not necessarily things that you want to bring in to work or have the conversation with colleagues or with those services inside the organisation. And then you might take higher education, where we're seeing that the responsibilities are still there, also purpose-driven, mission-driven organisations, but you're finding that, you know, people are very competitive. They're there, you know, particularly in some of the more prestigious universities, that there's this expectation that you're meeting certain demands and, you know, it's been very competitive to try to get to that situation. You don't necessarily want to share that you're struggling or finding it hard to keep up. And then also you might take places like engineering and construction, real estate. What we're finding is that there are people who have been operating perfectly fine for many, many years, but then the external factors, things like cost of living, are impacting them very highly. They have, because they've been operating very effectively, they haven't, now that things are becoming more difficult, they find it harder to talk to each other. They're feeling more disconnected. They're feeling like they're not able to do the things that they need to do to be effective in their workplace. And the other interesting observation is the differences aren't just with it across the different sectors. Even within an organization, there are differences that we're seeing between perhaps a clinical setting versus a non-clinical setting, or professional services versus support services versus different roles, because of the nature of the work, the way people's experiences in the lead up to the roles that they have means that you need to work in different ways. If you're a line manager, for example, or a manager within an organization, it can feel right now that it's really hard to meet the demands of those people that you feel like you have responsibilities towards and be able to look after yourself. If you're operational or perhaps further, you know, earlier in your career, people are feeling quite disconnected. They've lost control over the outcomes. They're not sure, not as confident about the future because they're not sure where things are going. There's been a lot of turbulence and uncertainty, and it's been hard to respond to that. So, you know, we are seeing real nuances across different sectors, but also within sectors that the nature of the roles can impact your experience.
And what's the implication of this kind of, in a sense, sort of general level of stress from what seems like a number of different sources on our ability as a society to address some of our key societal problems, like some of the equality and issues that we've been experiencing recently, or indeed just within organisations to be good leaders, to generate good performance in whatever industry we're in?
I love that question. So it's really fundamental. So one of the challenges that we see is that when you're not feeling psychologically safe, you're more likely to build walls rather than bridges. You're less likely to be able to innovate, to be able to collaborate, think differently. And for some of these challenges that you're talking about, whether that's gender inequality, racial injustice, biodiversity loss, you know, some of the climate impacts, we need to be able to think in a different way. We need to be able to, you know, try new things. We need to feel safe to be able to innovate. And also it means that, you know, when you don't feel like you're included, you're not able to contribute, you're not able to share ideas. And so it means we're not bringing in the perspectives from all the different voices that we need to be able to think about these challenges in a more systemic way. And that's, you know, even before we get to some of those challenges around, you know, right now, our human capital is our most vital asset. We're trying to do more with fewer people, and it's going to be really important that we're reducing staff absence, improving staff productivity, enabling people to be able to contribute and flourish and thrive and, you know, really face into these challenges, get ahead of these challenges together. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes perfect sense. And I think towards the end of this, perhaps we'll talk a little bit more about how people can practically move towards a state where they're more able to innovate, because I think it's so, so important for solving, as you say, some of these massive challenges that we face as a society, to be able to feel safe, to be able to work in multidisciplinary teams, to be able to kind of bring our best self to work so that we can solve some of these challenges.
There's a really specific example. So we've seen in one particular sector that if you're not feeling like you're able to contribute, or you're not feeling included, then it means you're less likely to call out errors. You're less likely to say, actually, I think we made a mistake here. I think we should do something differently, or we should try something differently. Or in a meeting, you might be less willing to see the good in an idea. You're more likely to shut something down. And then that's pervasive, and people will stop bringing new ideas. And so it is really important that we create those environments where everyone is able to feel like they can contribute and belong and be a part of the discussion.
So we're obviously super excited to be piloting MyMind at the moment at Oxford University Hospitals. And we're only 5 months into the pilot at the moment. So obviously it's early days, but we're really excited to see some of the developments of the solution. How do you think the pilot's going from your perspective, Henry?
Well, I mean, first of all, I need to say thank you very much to yourself, Megan, and the team at The Hill and OUH for giving us this opportunity to pilot. We are 5 months in and we're incredibly proud of the impact that we've been able to have already. In terms of a pilot, we recognise that the NHS is such a complex organisation. It's so hard to know how to navigate, how to bring in these, you know, these kinds of solutions and innovations across every sector, across every area, into an organisation like that, and to make it land really effectively. And, you know, first of all, we really feel that we've been able to, through this really supportive, collaborative process, through these, you know, very engaged, you know, senior stakeholders within OUH, they've been able to bring us in and help us to meet with the relevant teams, to really understand where are the challenges around sourcing, selecting, adopting, scaling out innovations, and, you know, really understanding right down at grassroots levels, you know, who are the different people that need to be involved? How do we need to articulate and present a solution like MyMind to be able to effectively, you know, land it, introduce it to the users, to the staff at OUH? And you know, 5 months in, we've started with two large directorates, one clinical, one non-clinical, plus the OUH charity, who very generously funded our pilot. We've seen around 60% of the workforces across the different directorates engaging, accessing those tools and resources. It's also been really hard. We've had to learn, understand the way, you know, within these acute settings, the different teams were, you know, recognizing that within a maternity team, for example, people are working different shifts and different patterns, and we need to approach them in different ways, in sharing what we do, helping to put them at ease, build the trust, you know, make it accessible and available to everyone. So it feels, you know, really early on, 5 months in, we've seen really positive engagement. We've been able to support many people who are coming in, accessing support for the very first time, or engaging with these kinds of resources for the very first time, because they were, because in some cases they might have been suffering in silence, or they've been unaware, or and we've been able to also, using the insights that were generated from across the different teams, provide additional curriculums and programs supporting the wider organization. So running some of the workshops and masterclasses where the feedback has been really positive from the different teams in feeling heard and understood, and being able to you know, share this common understanding and approach to really help everyone within the team. So really positive, as much from the learning around how do you introduce and deploy innovations like MyMind, how should we think about it, how do we engage, and right now we're in the evaluation phase, and it's been really, you know, invaluable working with the Hill team and the OUH team to understand, you know, how do we collect the data, and how do we present the data in a way that can really understand what's going to make this impactful and work, and not just, you know, going through the process or going through the motions, so that we really can have an impact. It's so important to us that we're making a difference for the individuals and the teams, not just going through those processes. So
I think it's really been helpful. Immensely helpful to you to have our colleagues in maternity and in digital and the people team really kind of working together across the institution, because, as you say, it's a very complex environment. There are lots of different sources of support for people. You know, I think we've certainly seen that MyMind has been an attractive source of support for people, and trying to work out where it fits within that jigsaw puzzle and how we, you know, best support our staff is really important to us. Yeah. So it's been fantastic to get that engagement from across the institution.
Yeah, really. I've been really pleased. Thank you.
How does it impact the wider development of MyMind to do this sort of pilot? Is it important to you in terms of the development of the solution?
Immensely important. I think right from the start, right from the outset, when we started developing MyMind, it is really important to us. We understood, you know, what, not just, you know, not just about my mind, but how are people using these kinds of solutions? What are the solutions that already exist? What are the barriers? Where are the levers? What's holding people back? Really understanding what people's motivations are and the barriers to be able to use these kinds of solutions. And by piloting, we've worked in a number of organizations and settings, and each one is different. And, you know, having a really supportive collaborative partner means that we can go in and really understand, you know, how should we develop and shape a solution and service like My Mind, and being able to gather feedback continuously from the users, from the senior sponsors, from the organization, understanding what's important to them, what's already available, how do we fit in alongside those existing solutions, how can we complement and amplify what's already there, not trying to, you know, just be the hero that you know turns up as a silver bullet, but really making the most of what's there and how we can reach and support people as effectively as possible. And, you know, we haven't always got it right in the organizations that we've worked with, but what we have always done is we've sought to understand where the challenges have been, and we've very quickly adapted and reshaped and redirected where we've needed to. And, you know, I think we've done the same thing here with OUH, that it's helped us to understand how you engage with clinical staff in a slightly different way to non-clinical staff. How do we need to present the solution? How do we bring people in? How do we make what we do as impactful and as efficient as possible? And it's very hard to do that, you know, from a textbook or theoretically. You have to be, you know, in the ground, you know, on the ground, you know, building it, designing it by doing.
Oh, and what's next for My Mind? You know, where are you going over the next sort of 4 or 5 years?
So, you know, we're growing. We're at a really exciting phase right now. So we've been working with a number of sectors, so healthcare, higher education, professional services. Our ambition is to try to, you know, reach many millions of people, but we're doing that in a step-by-step way. So we've been trying to get a really good understanding of what's happening within the sectors that we're working with, and we want to draw in, be able to reach and reach more across healthcare, more across higher education, more across some of the commercial sectors. We've been building the data, using the data that we're generating. We're looking for those cross-cutting themes across those sectors, so we're able to provide benchmarking and support to others who also identify with those challenges. We're building the app to go behind this. And so, you know, My Mind has always been this platform and service and team of responders, and we'd like to be able to reach and support people in, you know, the right ways, the ways that are appropriate for them. And so we've been understanding what would an app or what would a solution or tool need to look like to be effective. And so we're starting to build that out. We're starting to apply some of the predictive analytics that mean we're able to very early understand what's the trajectory for individuals or for teams or organizations, and being able to segment by role, gender, ethnicity, nature of role, the type of industry that they're in, and then be able to support people, you know, really proactively in a scalable way. So ultimately for us, it's about, you know, how do we scale the impact that we can have, and to reach many millions of people across these sectors. It's really important to us.
So for those organizations that don't yet have My Mind, what can they be doing to support their employees, to support their leaders and the teams that work there?
So, I mean, the first thing to say is there isn't a one size fits all. You know, every organization is different. They have different experiences, different exposures. They've had different journeys to get here. But the first thing I would say is it's really important to prioritize well-being. And that's not because it's a tick box exercise or a nice thing to do. You know, we talked earlier about how it's essential that we're enabling people to contribute, to have the agency to feel safe, ability to innovate and collaborate and do the work that they do. And so we need to think about how we can protect, promote and restore well-being, taking this really holistic approach. So how do we create an environment where everyone is able to flourish and thrive within the organization and feel like they can contribute? So that means creating a common language, making sure that, you know, everyone understands what we mean by mental health and well-being, to be able to understand how within the organization different people are impacted and experience it. We need to support our managers. We need to, you know, equip our managers, you know, who are sometimes, you know, just facing those demands, trying to keep up with all of the demands of their colleagues, and they don't necessarily always know what to do, how to support. And so we need to provide that support, the line manager training, the management training, based on the needs within within the organization. And, you know, sometimes people are struggling. Sometimes people do, you know, find things difficult either because of challenges at work or from outside of work. And we need to be able to have the right tools and resources to be able to intervene effectively and safely to identify where those concerns are. And, you know, whether that's through some of the existing solutions, things like the EAPs, the occupational health that are already available, but often reactive. You want to ensure that you have resources, things like MyMind or other services like MyMind, that can identify where those concerns are there and have access to really timely support, creating a really confidential space where people feel safe to talk about their experiences and get access to those appropriate tools and resources, whether within the organization or outside of the organization.
So I'm hearing that you need to prioritize well-being. You Yes. need to train your managers. And you then need to have the resources available. And it sounds like it's two different types of resources in a sense. That's sort of reactive, helping people when they have a problem, but also proactive, identifying when problems might occur or how people can build their resilience in advance of an issue.
So creating environments, you know, really protecting, creating an environment where people can flourish and thrive, and that's building that capability. In you know, building the capability across the organization, but then also, you know, recognizing, of course, some people will sometimes struggle, and, you know, having the right resources available to for people to access those when needed.
And how about as individuals? How can we support our own well-being and that of the people around us?
Sure, vital. So, you know, I think one of my favorite phrases that I find myself saying on an almost daily basis is that thing you hear when you get on a plane, remember to put your own oxygen mask on before you try and help other people. You can't pour from an empty cup. And, you know, particularly for managers, it's really important that we're looking after ourselves, because, you know, our colleagues aren't going to reach out to us if they feel that we're already frazzled. They don't want to pass their challenges on to someone who's already struggling. I think there's probably three elements to this that I like to think about. So the first one is, you know, practicing self-care, doing those things that are really important to you. And, you know, it's easier said than done. You know, you can, you know, people talk about you need to get sleep and rest. You need to, you know, have good nutrition. You need to do each of these things, which are easier said than done. I make it simpler than that. I think it's really important that you do something that you really love. You need to prioritize those things that give you energy, those things that you can really look forward to, because that means it will, you know, protect your outlook. It'll mean that you can be more confident. You'll be looking forward to these things. You can feel, you know, better and stronger. And as I say, it's easier said than done. The way I think about it is, you know, how do you start? Not how do I run 7 marathons in 7 days, but, you know, what's the first thing that I can do? What's something really simple that I can try to prioritize? So it might be as simple as, actually, this week I'm going to get out for a walk 3 times. I'm going to play tennis once. I'm going to cook at home twice. So just something really practical and achievable that doesn't feel overwhelming or intimidating, that you feel you can actually get started. So the first one is, you know, do something you love, you know, practice that self-care, do something that gives you energy. I mean, second thing we're seeing, a lot of people have been struggling with connection right now, feeling like they're connected. And the way I think about this that's really nice is, you know, think about who you can reach out to. You know, we always really appreciate it when our phone pings, or, you know, we get that unexpected message or that unexpected call from someone. So, you know, trying to just rebuild that connection, reach out to someone who you haven't spoken to for a while, remind yourself, reconnect, rebuild that network, re-engage. And, you know, it will bring a smile to the person you're talking to. It'll bring a smile to yourself. It will make a really big difference. And the third one is gratitude. Really important. It's so things are really difficult right now. There've been so many challenges, so many, you know, difficult situations. You know, our experiences in the world have been really difficult, and, you know, it's sometimes hard to remember all of those good things that have happened around us. Those little things, those little moments of joy. And I think it's really helpful to practice gratitude every morning, every evening. Think about those things that have gone really well, those things that have made you smile that day, those things that make you happy. And remember those good things, because it will just build that platform to grow on and bring you joy and energy and health. So that first one, do what you love, reconnect with those people around you, and be grateful, practice gratitude.
That last one really resonates with me, actually, because I always found it quite difficult to do gratitude practice just because it just sort of felt very formulaic or very sort of structured or kind of slightly self-conscious in a sense. But now I do thank yous every evening with my children. Mm. When they're in bed, then I say, oh, is anyone thank you, thankful for anything that has happened today? And we do thank yous. And it's really nice because actually they don't have that self-consciousness and they're very happy to say, oh, I did this wonderful thing today, or I'm thank you to so-and-so for this, or that kind of thing. And I think it's a really powerful thing, and it reminds you that there are good things in life, even when other things are quite hard. That there's always something you can be thankful for, I think.
There's always something to smile about and remind yourself.
That's a great note to end. Thank you very much, Henry. I'm very thankful that you've joined us on this podcast. It's been fantastic, lovely conversation, and looking forward to the next one.
Thank you ever so much, Megan. It's always a real pleasure, and thank you for all you do to support.
You've been listening to The Hill's Digital Innovation Podcast. Find out more about our work bringing digital technologies into the NHS at www.thehilloxford.org. You'll see details of our open access events, as well as applications to programmes such as our flagship Market Access Accelerator for startups looking to work with the NHS. Don't forget to also check out Series 1 and 2 of the podcast.